Welcome to The Green Card with me, Katie Green. I am joined with the very funny, my hermano.
Yeah, you can say that too. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Uri Styler Green. There you go.
Yes, there
I'll
we go.
I'll make sure they know that we got the, we're family there.
Yeah, some people don't know his real last name, but I do because we're family.
Mm-hmm.
How we doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. It's been quite a few months since we probably caught up.
Yeah, I've not been around. I took a bit of a break. So
yeah.
And included in that break, I was out the country a lot. So a lot of the times, even for your double quinceañera, I couldn't even make it because I was working on a cruise. I'm so sorry
about
that.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay.
I apologize. It looked good.
Your presence was felt.
There we go. As long as that's the case. I made sure I said congratulations. I made sure I sent love. I just couldn't be there.
Yeah, that's okay.
That's the thing. So because I've been out and about, I've been between here, parts of Europe, America, and Canada, like quite often, partially for just having a bit of a breather. A lot of the time it was work-based. I just haven't seen a lot of people.
So you took the time off for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were overwhelmed with work or what was the...
I did Fringe last year and I hated comedy afterwards.
Yeah.
Simply done. You done Fringe the same time as me. You did,
the Pleasance Reserve.
The Reserve.
Yeah.
Okay. So on the Reserve, I don't know if they, is there the pressure on the Reserve to have to get stars for your performance?
No, there's no pressure.
Okay. So with us who were doing like the full hour, wherever you're doing your show, as much as you go in there and say, this is for the audience, this is for the punters who want to laugh, there's that pressure of everybody making you feel like you have to get the stars.
Yeah.
You see everyone's posters around. Mm-hmm. You're like, I knew I had some reviewers in where a day, where's my stars coming in? And it took me away from what I've always done as a comedian, is just go in there and have a great time making the audience laugh. Because somebody else has told me you got to do it for these likes, these numbers, these stars, these reviews. Because I was always kind of anti-Fringe before that. Going in there with the idea of, well, I'm going to do it at least once just so I can not just be anti-Fringe because I've said so, but go up there and see if it is for me or not. I went up there and it just kind of reaffirmed what I already knew, which is you can tap dance for that kind of industry if you want to. And I don't think everyone who goes up there does that. But the ones who do and they just want the reviews and to kind of pitch to the people that give stars and the reviewers.
Yeah.
If you want to do that, you can. But for those who really just want to make the audience laugh and have a good time with the audience and hopefully that boosts your career or makes you a better comic, it's really, really stressful.
It is.
Like it, you saw where you came to where I was staying up at the Fringe. It was just outside of town.
Yeah.
I felt so much peace leaving like the town center where all of the posters, I mean, where were you? Were you staying where you come out and you see posters all the time?
I come out, I see posters. So it was a bit different experience that I had because it was like, we didn't have as much pressure. It was a compilation show.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of pressure on that show. Like there, we had industry in every single night and we wouldn't know. We'd just know, like we'd find out after.
Afterwards,
and then
yeah, yeah.
My agent retired halfway through. So the latter 2 weeks, it was like I had someone coming out every single day. So the pressure.
And no one to reference you to when, like reviewers to the agent or the.
Right. Or like, because I had like, I mean, I'm emailed pretty much almost everybody being like, hey, I'm doing this thing and whatever.
Yeah.
And that had a pressure in itself, but I had not felt the pressure that you doing your own show had felt until I went for a few days this year and I did not have a good time.
It's horrible sometimes.
But like, so there's multiple things going on. Mm. The vibe is off.
Yeah.
The whole vibe of the city, because, you know, doing comedy, I'm very similar to you, and like it's what I love to do. The people in front of you are the most important.
Always.
I feel the same about wanting to have a show and being like, with that same mentality that you have just explained of like, let's see if this is for me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it is, but like, it'd be nice to like challenge myself or have that month of an hour every single day. But the outside stuff really gets inside.
It really, you try for it not to.
Yeah.
But it's, you can't help but look at, especially where we was at the Pleasance, you go in, there's that board on the right that says sold out shows. And you're like, mine isn't on that one tonight. Okay. And then you got to think, all right, I got to get tickets sold to maybe make it a full show. And then it might be a third of the way or away from being sold. And you're like, well, we still have a good time. Then you go and do the show. And it's one you've done the night before. So it becomes very repetitive after a while. You've got to think, how do I make new ways to spice up the show? And then you come out and everyone's been like, that was great, that was great, that was great. And then a review that you didn't know was in there will come back and say, everyone loved it, but I felt like it just didn't tell me enough of a story, 3 stars. And you're like, everything I've kind of ignored about not selling out, and then everyone having a great time, and then wanted to take pictures or wanted to come again, and then you've come in and let me know that you didn't like it.
Yeah.
As much as you know that that one person's opinion doesn't matter, the city in that time have told these people, you are the important ones and your reviews matter.
Yeah.
And it's just pressure that.
But also the extra elements of, like, I mean, I was talking to Tad about this.
Yeah.
And there's other things that people don't realize. And like, I think culturally, I find this going out there, I have horrible times.
Seriously, how come?
Because the music, I don't know what these people are listening to. Karaoke, I'm like, how the fuck do you guys know these songs? Where are these songs from?
Everyone's
what version of white culture is this? Like, it's so hard for me. And I have this, like, I have this, and I, it's like being American, but also being Latina. It's like, it's like, I feel super, like, you want to be out and you want to unwind, but like unwinding the same way that other people who are, you know, white British people do, is very different than how I would.
It's the, culturally in the UK, it's go to the pub, have a drink.
Yeah.
If you're not a drinker, you almost feel like you can go in the environment, but the vibe everybody else is on, you're not going to be on because they're drinking heavy. And also when you're there to work as well every day, there's a part of you going, all right, I'm not doing this every night. I might come out for a drink with you one night. Tomorrow I got to get back and get an early night. I want to go. Remember you came and you went on to the Peloton bike at the Airbnb.
Yes.
You want to be able to keep fit. You want to go to the gym or whatsoever. Whereas there's a lot of the people that are like, the way of depressing of the day is to have a drink, get a bit laggard, be able to, let's say it like it is. There are some people that were like linking up with other people in the city. And I'm like, I don't shit where I eat. I would never want to be doing any of it. Like, I don't want to be with another comedian. And
it feels like high school.
It felt exactly that. I'm not saying people, I mean, they're a genuine relationship. That's great. But the whole quick hook up and then bounce out for me.
No.
With other people you have to do a gig with the next day.
Absolutely not.
You saw my house. I was there. I had the PlayStation. I had the Xbox lined up. I had my laptop. I had all my podcasting equipment. I was ready to go home every day, sit down, relax, and switch off, wake up, go gym the next morning, and come back and do it all again because I wanted to stay regimented.
And you had your meal preps?
Oh my God. I was solid with keeping my food
tidy. And you
tidy.
Went to Costco too.
Yep.
You went up. To Costco. I go into this guy's fridge. He's got a fucking like family pack of everything.
Yep.
Everything you could ever want.
The ginger shots with the turmeric shots. I had the chicken, all like the big packs of chicken. I would cook it. I'd freeze it. Or the bits that I would cook for the week, I cook it down, I separate it into containers. I had the big containers to put in the freezer. I made sure that I was solid in terms of staying on mission with what was going on up there. So you can imagine the level of input I put up there. I left with an award. I was very happy about that.
Yeah.
But I still came out thinking, if this is what comedy has to be for you to become more successful in this industry, there was a part of me going, I don't know if I want it. So I wanted to, there was a part after Fringe, September 2022, I sat down and went, I don't know if I want to do comedy. I left the UK and went to Canada for about 2 weeks. And I said, let me try comedy out here, see how it is. I had a great time out there, it was fun. Bucked up with a few of my friends who are out there. Shouts to Erica,
yes.
And, oh my God, she, anytime I message her, I say, look, listen, who can you throw me in the direction of to speak to? She's got a list of people. She's already made a contact for me. They've got shows on this day. Go and do that. I'm like, thank you, Erica. She lets me know that if you go out there, I will throw your name into a few places. So I've always got time for her. She did that, went out there. It reminded me that you can go and enjoy comedy without the pressure of it being review, review, review.
Right.
Tap dance for industry. Don't just be funny. Tell us a story. And it just got to the point of me having to find that out again. Came back in October and I went and did a 21 Soho gig. that I wasn't supposed to do. Someone had dropped out, a headliner. They called and said, are you available? I said, I'll come down and do it. I did that show and it reminded me, this is why we do the comedy.
Okay.
So outside the bubble, went to 21, loved it. I said, right, I love doing what I do. It feels like I needed the break to get my head right. So I finished up everything I had booked for until the end of the year. I said, January 2023, I'm going to take a year off. Got to January. When I say take time off, it wasn't stop doing comedy, but stop doing anything that's trying to build up to the next level of comedy. Maybe take a breather, coast a bit, go and do shows you know you can comfortably do, go and do gigs that are more so just to keep your bills paid, rather than, like, for example, you've set up the podcast for yourself, rather than trying to set up something to go to figure out what the next level is, try and sit and look at how your life is domestically, how your mental health is, how your emotions are and keeping them balanced, how you feel about yourself as a comedian in the space that you're in, and take that time to slow down. So when you've had that break and you finish the year, you can then shoot off again. I had already agreed to do a couple of gigs, which were like on a cruise.
Yeah.
I'd already agreed on some of the international things I didn't want to say no to. I was doing Babatunde's tour, Babahood. The first leg of it, I was the opener. Couldn't pull out of any of that and I didn't want to. So I went and did that. Got to February or March when I was doing his tour, because Live Nation are running that tour.
Yeah.
They were like, they came to me, Ori, when are you doing your next one? Because I'd done four tours already myself. Live Nation said, would you like to do a tour? We love your stuff. We would like to produce a tour for you. So I said, okay. It took a minute for me to think if I want to go and do this. I said, okay, but it can't be until 2024 because this year I'm taking a breather. So we looked at it. They said 2024 from February to May. Would you be up for that? I said, cool. When that happened, it got to like, I think May, where I had to make a decision that I can't do the year off. I had to stop maybe about September because I need to write the tour. I need to practice the show. I need to get all the material done. But in that time, I was able to take a step back, cover debts that I had from even before COVID, get my house sorted, because I'd moved out of London. I moved to another house and I hadn't finished decorating it and so on. Get my like domestic life together, because there was a lot of my mental and emotional like disarrays that I had to get into sync.
Yeah.
And I never stopped doing comedy from I started from like 13 and a half years ago. So I needed to learn how to stop and go, what am I doing? Why am I doing this?
Right.
And then start again afterwards.
A reset.
Yeah. But it was Fringe that kind of was a straw that broke the camel's back and made me go, yo, something ain't right. You need to really slow down, figure out what you want
to
do.
It's a hard industry to be in. I mean, any type of entertainment, but comedy, it's like you can chase like what you think you're meant to be chasing for so long up until you break, and then you really, that's when I feel like you really forge your own path, and you kind of, you, everyone has to.
Yeah.
I think people think that you don't have to, and that there's always a path. And if you ever take the path that's already been any somewhat type of forge, it's not going
to
be,
it's not genuine to you.
No.
And also you'll be always in the shadow of whoever.
Yeah.
I see the books. You got some of the comedians that you like here as well.
Yeah, I do. I've got, some of them are, not all the books are, some I've just bought, you know, just
fair enough.
They're not necessarily my favorite comedians.
That's fair enough.
Know?
No, that's fair enough. And one of my favorite comics to watch is, not because of his comedy is great and I've seen him live, is Schultz, Andrew Schultz. Not but just because of the comedy, it's, you make your own lane.
Yeah.
Like he did that whole turn the phone thing. Everybody started doing that afterwards. But no one, like you always remember he was the first one to do it. He leans into, I'm going to say what I say and be genuine to myself. But he's intelligent enough to back some of his stuff, which when he's saying it, seems a bit like, oh, that might offend some people. But he can back that.
Yeah.
And then you have a loyal amount of people, sorry, a loyal fan base that love what you do. So when you put on your own shows in different countries and selling out arenas or selling out large theatres, people are like, well, how? It's because you've created your own path and more people are invested in you that way, rather than just trying to tap dance for the industry
for the industry or for the market or for any other type of like
exactly
that is it is so remarkable. Anyone who has created their own path,
it's hard to deny them like their ability.
Yeah,
to,
you have to give credit when credit is due. Exactly that. Who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want a whole fan base of people who are just interested in you based on what you created yourself? No industry needed. No TV show needed. No other comic had done that before up until that time.
And I think that's what I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm like him or that person's like them or so on. You got to figure out what your thing is.
Right.
But I think if you focus on what you think the world wants you to be, as opposed to who you are, you're going to fall flat because the world doesn't even necessarily know what it wants its individual people in positions to be.
Exactly. And I think this is where Edinburgh really is a mindfuck, because I can sit here so comfortably and be like, oh, I'm on my own path. Like this, like stand up is not a race. It's like, I am against myself. There's nobody next to me on either side.
Yeah.
What is theirs is theirs. Cause nobody's me.
Yeah.
You know? And what's mine will come to me when it's meant to be.
Yeah.
Where you get to Edinburgh and you get to these competitions, you get to the other things, and you're like, oh, I need to be doing this. I need to be doing this. But also,
for those people in the seat.
Yeah. And it's not even like, it's Edinburgh, but it's also like every other thing. Like, I just went to LA and I saw an old friend and I hadn't seen him for a while. And a lot of the conversation was like, you know, talking about income and talking about like other people who we know who are like progressing or like who are having kids and things like that. And like for me, I was like, oh no, like that's not like I'm not on that path right now. And like, oh, I should be on that path. And like
you shouldn't if it's not what you want to
exactly
do. Was you worried about like not being married or having
I was
kids?
Worried it does feel like that pressure, and I feel like that's a pressure I already put on myself, because it does feel like that is a validation. Like I look at like I really annoyingly consider, I feel like if I had a partner, then I'd be like, wow, that's validation in some way, shape, or form.
It's wild because I know a lot of women that feel that way because of what they've been told, especially by their elders. When are you going to have a husband to take care of you?
Yeah.
When are you going to have some children? My grandchildren. I'm like, you ain't going to babysit them as much as I need you to for me to be able to work and afford the rent or mortgage in the house I need for them to. And all of a sudden you understand that other people's pressure on you, you can't hold that validate, and that validation, you can't seek that in other people.
You can't. I that is a lot of pressure. Like I think I was maybe talking to my therapist or a friend there. Who, what's the difference?
One of the same. Yeah.
And they were talking about the pressure that puts on another person.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, I agree with that, but it does feel like for some reason, if I was able to like find a partner, it would make the other things like more okay.
Do you know, I've had that as well. When I look at some of my peers in comedy or in acting, and I'm like, they're married, they've got their children, and they're off to work.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at myself going, I must be failing, because I've only got the work bit down, or I haven't got the work bit down to the degree that they might have in some instances. But that there are other things that I have to look at and go, but if I'm thrown into this environment or in this room, that's where I've maybe surpassed them.
Yeah.
Where I can go and do a show and be comfortable to do a show that way. Whereas, and be able to double up or be able to run to another city and be able to make a nice little bit of wedge. Whereas they have to go home to their family. And I don't think neither is better than the other. It just depends on where you're at. I'll be real with you. I've had to not block, mute some people on my own social media that I'm close with, just because I can't watch you. And the only reason I can't watch you is because I watch you sometimes on my worst of days, and I'm like, why haven't I got this? Or why am I not married yet? Or so on. And I can't, let that do that to yourself.
And social media does it. And it does. It's hard to have it in your face of being like other people's.
When you're dealing with your own demons about how you might feel about what other people have that you don't have, you can't carry
exactly.
that.
Exactly. But it's like, also it's like, it's a bit the own demons, but also like the pressure that other people put on you. It's like, I wish I had something to bring to the table that was of value.
Because it feels like, that's the thing. But you forget that.
You forget it. And also the standard, like, Like the industry that we're in, like what I value is a lot different than what other people value.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't talk a lot about income because it fluctuates. It's like, and right now it's down. Okay. I'm still pursuing and doing what I want to do, but it's not in a place where like stand up can be really, really like,
it's not easy, it is definitely some days is, oh, I got this gig and it's a good pay and my bills are covered. Another one, it's like, I mean, this little open mic is great for practice, but this ain't gonna cover the water.
100%.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And then sometimes it's like the fee changes, or sometimes it's like
travel costs,
travel,
hotel because it's too far, and that eats into the money and all sorts. All right, let me give you something, right? This will help. I hope it helps. The amount of people that preface seeing me by the things they think I have, like for example, you know what car I drive?
Yes.
So people will come up to me instantly and see me and go, "Yo, Ori, what's going on? How's the Tesla?" That's what they'll say to me. The way I want to punch the Mario coins when they say like in it, I want to smoke their boots so much, because just because I have that car, you don't know the days where I was driving a Peugeot 106,
right,
where the heating fan was broken. So I would turn the heating up. Because the fan was broken, I had to hit speed so the air would push through the vent to heat me up in the car when it was like a January or February. Or when I couldn't open the outside of the car. I'm sorry, so I couldn't open the passenger door from the outside of the car. So to let someone in, I had to go in on the driver's side, open up the passenger door, and then they can climb in. Travis J will tell you this. There was one time that my windscreen wiper was broken. It was heavy raining. My man had to put his hand outside and wipe it for me to drop him to the train station. So when people look at me and go, yeah, that was my life, I'm not going to lie to you, he will vouch for that. Ask him. So when you're asking me, how's the car? You don't never ask me when you thought that I was down and you didn't want to highlight those things. There was a big struggle to get to where I'm at now.
Yeah.
And even at the point I'm at now, I'll tell you this. I've said this on a few podcasts before and I've said this to a few friends. I did a Comedy Mania weekender in 2018.
Yeah.
First one I did was hiring out a holiday park, but it was all out of my pocket. I was saving up to buy a house. So I put some money down to save, but I looked at this opportunity and went, if I can create a weekender that happens every year, I might be able to create an event that if I get 400 or 500 people go every year, it's a great getaway. They go, and I could see enough money to be able to save up what is effectively a reasonable deposit every year for a house, that kind of level of profit. First couple of years I'm gonna lose, but after that it's gonna pick up. That's what I told myself. Did the first one, I lost about, it was down about 14 grand. But that for me was okay because it was roughly the amount that I had saved. So I was willing to lose that. Then the next year, because they moved it from April where Easter was to the end of March where everyone's still at school, like the kids, everyone's still working, there's no holidays. So they couldn't really take the time off to come to the weekender. That 14 grand had been gone. I'd invested some more into the next year, hoping the momentum would get more people to come down. And I lost about 19. So I lost more. You add that up, I'm down 33 grand out of my pocket.
Yeah.
And then obviously I had to pay all my people that were there. Some of them I was like, look, this is where I'm at. But because they'd done events with me for many, many years, some people were like, Ori, it's you. You get me when you can. On the next tour, if you've got money to pay me then. Or I just, don't worry about it, I'm here to make sure you get through this. So thank God for people like that. But not everyone was like that.
Yeah.
So I had to pay people. All in all, after paying people, after dealing with like tax, after dealing with any interest on things that I had to, like loans to cover the debts and so on that I had to pay off, I was down about 39, 40 grand. That was 2019 was the second one. What happened a year later? We were in lockdown. I couldn't even work to recoup money to keep paying up the payments. So that debt's accumulating. No one's knowing this because I'm keeping up my smiley face.
Yeah.
I'm out here saving to get the money for the debt, saving for a house, trying to invest in my future whilst paying off my current, like paying your rent or paying off your bills, and also covering debts from before. I'm keeping a big smile on my face, but I'm breaking inside. It's only earlier on this year that I finished clearing the debt. So every time you've seen me and everyone goes, Ori, you're one of the hardest working people out there.
Yeah.
You're always gigging, you always drive up and down, you always go and do this, that, and the third. They don't know I have to because I got debts I have to clear.
Oh, wow.
So when you come see me, you're like, yo, Uri, how's the Tesla? Mm-hmm. Ask me how the debt was. You yeah. don't know that. You're asking me based on what you see because you see the surface stuff. But I had to work my ass off and damn near kill myself doing it
yeah.
to try and clear all these debts. So when you might be like, money's tight right now, believe you me, when you look at other people on socials and they look like they're up, they're doing well,
yeah.
they've got this show on TV, they might be appearing on this panel show, they're on this like reality, whatever it is, your peers, believe me, some of them are having to keep face because they're not letting you know
yeah.
what's going on.
Yeah.
So when people saw me, they were like, yeah, Uri's up, he's doing his thing, not realizing I'm having to cover a debt as big as someone's year salary whilst having to still try and write material,
yeah.
try and go out there and do what I got to do, try and keep like my home together, my relationship at the time together, trying to like keep my head on my shoulders, trying to still look like Uri's active. It damn near killed me. So
wow.
Yeah, yeah. People don't know that because they only see the surface stuff.
Yeah.
So anytime you're like, money's tight, believe me, you're not the only one out there.
Yeah.
You are not the only one.
Yeah, and I feel that. I mean, it's a hard time. And I think it's hard with social media because it's like some people don't see it like that. They'll see a few things and they don't see everything behind. You're right. Like people see the Tesla, they're like, they don't want, he's fine.
Yeah, yeah. They'll see that and they'll think he's up, he's out and about, he's really doing his thing because of their idea. It's cheaper for me to have the car that I have because all the driving I do, electricity is cheaper. I moved out of London because you might see a house and go, he's got his own house. It's out of London. For like renting in London is more expensive than what I pay to live out of there. It's smart moves that look dope on the outside, but also
They're strategic.
They're strategic. Mm-hmm. Like I save more money on this than I did I had a VW before to drive around and do gigs. That was killing me because of driving up and having to fill up with diesel to go up to Manchester, then back down again. And all the money from the show goes into either food, hotel, and then the drive up there and back and stuff. So believe it's I get it. And this is why there's so many times that even though I'm like 13, nearly 14 years in, I look at some of my peers who are around the same time as me. There are some that don't like to associate with like newer comics. I've noticed that. There are some that are okay with them.
Yeah.
They might be polite, but they don't like to associate with comics who are newer. I remember the graft I had as a newer comic much higher and much more hungry than it was when I got to like the 10-year mark. If you lose that graft, somebody who has that graft who's newer will get that as well.
Yeah.
I love being around you and other comics who are under 10 years.
Yeah.
Because to keep my head like straight with this is what you love doing, this is how much work you got to put in, you got to look at some of the people that are where you were at when you were at your graftiest.
Yeah.
And you got to keep an eye on them because one, they'll outgraft you
yeah.
when you're slowing down, getting comfortable.
Because the graft doesn't stop. Like,
it never stops.
You always have to level up. Like,
and it should never get comfortable.
No, never. And that's the thing with like being in a creative field.
Yeah.
It's like you've always got, every time you get to the level you think you wanted to be at, there's another level that you got to get to.
Do you know what woke me up as well a lot more to how lax we can be in the UK is
New York.
My most recent trip to New York.
Yeah.
I've been loads of times and seen comedy out there. And I watched my peers who are out there that are people that I only get to see when I go to America or they come here, but in their environment, work. I think it's that hunger that I see out there.
Yeah.
That when I came back here, I looked at myself and I went, wow, I love comedy. I want to see more of that happen here. It's not impossible. It may not be possible for everybody because not everyone wants to do that. But if you can find a pocket where you want to be the person that can do that,
yeah,
go for it.
I think it's a very American mentality. Like people look at me because I gig like 7 days a week.
Yeah,
people look at me and they're like,
surprised, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, wow. And then some people look at it with like, you're insane. And some people look at it with a bit of like, wow, I wish I could do that. It's like, yeah, you can. You just don't, you just have to sacrifice in other areas.
It's which is why I understand when people do have families, they can't do that as much.
Yeah.
But if you are in our position, that we haven't got like a family or kids or anything like that, I think I think anyone who looks at you and goes, wow, you're gigging a lot. Yeah, I love doing this.
But also it's like, I really, it's a struggle in where I'm at, because it feels like I always have to be. It feels like, you know, so? Around the 8 o'clock mark, yeah. If I'm like 8 o'clock on a Tuesday, I'm like, you know, I never, it's hard for me to be like, yeah, I'm gonna go to the movies with you. Mm. Or I'm gonna like, or like, let's, people, when people talk about dating and I'm like, oof, wow, I can't, I can't plan something at 7 p.m. What if I get a call at 8?
There'll be, this is the thing that I know I needed to learn is balance. But you have to learn how to balance when you do gig heavy like that, or when you do decide to slow down. You shouldn't force the balance. If you have the time, energy, passion, and want to get up and go and gig.
Yeah.
But if your body is also telling you you're tired, like if it's not telling you you're tired, work. But if it's telling you, let's slow down, you didn't get through that set properly because your mind is exhausted, or you need to learn how to balance between like the energy you have in a day and a nighttime. If you're losing energy by the nighttime, your body's telling you you're tired. At those points, definitely find a way to balance.
Yeah.
But if you are sitting here, let's say you didn't have a date night and you did have energy, looking for the date night is one thing. Looking for a gig is another thing. They're both about the same amount of energy in my eyes.
Well, one's a lot easier.
The gig?
Yeah, it's so much easier. Like to find a date is like,
God. Come on, you must. I don't use like them apps and stuff. I'm not in that realm anymore at all. But like Tinder and all of that.
I never use Tinder.
No?
No. I'm just not like, I'm really particular with things and like the way guys approach me. Like some ways guys approach me really, really like just automatically give me the ick.
What's the ick? What's the
like if it's too much of like a, like you gotta conceal that you wanna fuck me. I don't wanna know it right away. You know what I mean? Like I don't like that.
How do you conceal it?
What if
that's what he wants and he's just being real with you?
Then be real with somebody else.
Okay, that's fair.
Like
that's
it's
fair.
Just not.
But would you want a man to conceal it, or would you want it to be honest so you know what you're getting?
So this is a big question.
Mm.
I don't know. Because on one hand, honesty is very important.
Yes.
Right. Like I just feel like that. I've been in a lot of things where there's not been honesty, there's not been transparency.
Okay.
And it's really, really affected me and the dynamic and everything like that.
Makes sense, yeah.
But I mean, I guess I just want someone to like, it seems like what I want is not achievable, because I'm like, I just like a guy to like not be horny all the time. Like, is that like...
From my experience, I find, this is me personally, women are the ones in my life, when I look historically, that have been more horny than I have.
Right.
And want to get down. Not because I'm not interested in getting down, but because I could be so work driven. There are times that I'm like, I'm good for tonight. I got work to do. And so on. So when you say that the guys are always horny, I don't see it from my side, but right. I see when it happens to other people.
But then it's also like, I have been like, were interested in guys and they've been like, I'm sorry, I'm just really busy. And then I'm like, wow, what a turn on. They're busy. Wow. They have things to do.
I'm not going to lie. That is weird for me to hear. Look, you lot got to decide what you want.
I know, that's the problem.
I want a guy to make the effort and show me he wants to make the effort. But if he's then busy, oh my God, I like that he's busy. It shows that he's got a passion or a drive in something.
Yes.
But if he's too busy for you, this guy is just too busy.
I don't get the I get the like, oh my God. Then it makes me like them even more. But then it's like unattainable. Like I like them because they're like unattainable. Wow. Or then it makes me think like, oh, wow, God, I wish that I would be important enough for them to like make time for.
There's a level of toxicity in there.
Oh, it's so
but
toxic.
Not towards him, but more so towards yourself.
So much toxicity.
Wow.
I'm like, I just want to like, God, what would it be like? What would I have to do? And then it makes me overthink.
Yeah.
Like the scenarios. I'm like, God, maybe I was not interesting, or maybe like I could have been more... intellectual when we were hanging out. And then it's like, then I'm like, oh, what? I'm like, of course I wasn't as interesting. And then it just goes in a spiral.
But you are interesting.
But well, to some so degree.
But so is the work that they're doing that they might make them busy. You are an interesting person.
To some people, not to everybody.
Well, no, to the person that you might be dating. Let's assume that you are interesting to him. But also, but if he's busy, you're telling yourself, I may not be as interesting as the things he needs that he's working. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Like, so if he's always distracted by work, he must not want to spend time with me, or like, he must not think of me as high enough or interesting enough to want to put the work down.
Yes.
Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah.
Okay. See it this way. Imagine he's working because whatever he's working on, he feels he needs to do that, because if he doesn't seem to have something popping off in the world that he's doing, he may not be interesting enough to you. Like, we men feel that sometimes, where we're sitting there looking at ourselves, like, we'll go in our field again, comedy. Take us as comedians. You remember how insecure comedians were in the first year or two of being comedians? So they have to do everything they can to let other
year
people know.
Year or two?
I'm going to say 10, a year or two.
10 years.
All right, let's say 10 years.
The first then. 10, 20 years.
Don't do that, because I would like to feel that I'm not in that place anymore. I've been more serious on this pod than funny. Some comedians like to have to let people know that they're a comedian, even when they're not on stage, by always trying to be funny off stage.
Right.
Because they want to have that appeal enough that when you look at them, you know that they are really good at the job that they do, or they're prime in the job that they do, because you laugh when they make you laugh. Some comedians are that insecure that do that. We all have been through that stage at some point. But you get to a point where you've done enough on stage, or you've done enough in your career, that you don't have to be funny when you're off stage to let people know you do comedy. You can simply say it, they can either look you up, or they can already know you're a comedian and go, oh, you do that for a living and I respect the level that you're at. This guy that might be grafting may not feel he's at that level yet, that he could slow it down, because he wants to be able to look at you, looking at him going, he's successful in his field, by trying to get to that level of success, so it validates him enough that he can go, she can look at what I do and I can at least show her, this is the fruits of my labor.
Right. All I think is, he thinks I'm boring.
After all of that,
I think so boring.
Nah.
It must be
come
me.
On. It's not always you.
This is where I struggle with dating.
Okay.
Because when it comes to not working out, it always comes to rejection. And like, even if it's like, even if I've been with guys and it's incredibly not compatible, shouldn't be together, just not the one, it's still, I will still put it on myself and be like, well, yeah, it's. I'm trying to work on it, but it's.
Do you know what? I'll be honest with you, from my perspective. Let's say me and you dated. I'd be more than happy to know you put it on you than me. I'm not gonna lie.
But then once people know that information, then they kind of.
Oh, they use that.
They use the information.
All right, that's. I'm not saying it from the angle of I'd want to use it.
Right.
I'm saying it from the angle of that. All right. Take the joke out of it for a second. I think it's respect. I think it's more honorable that somebody would look at themselves and go, what could I have done more? What better could I have done?
Yeah.
Before instantly going to, what, you don't want me? You're a dickhead. It's all on you.
Yeah.
He might be a dickhead. It might be all on him. But if your first point of call is to go look at yourself and go, what could I have done better? And you have the self-esteem
I don't have the self-esteem level. It comes from a place of insecurity. I'm not looking at it like, oh, he's, you know, what an asshole, he doesn't like me or whatever. Like, I feel like I can never have that ego. Like, I feel like I could never say to somebody, like, even when I feel like, but I'm worth it, it feels like I'm like, oof, what an ego.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, babe, you got to dead that.
Yeah.
It's all good looking at yourself and being introspective first, but you should at least have the balance enough of an ego to be comfortable enough to say, well, I've looked at this, I did okay with this, I did right with this, I made effort here, I did what I could to make this work, and it didn't, it must be incompatibility or it must be him. That's healthy. But if you look at yourself and you find things all the time, even if there isn't anything to find, but you make that, oh my God, I didn't call him enough, even when I was ill that day.
Yeah.
And you blame yourself for that. Babe, I pray that you don't have that for too much longer. Obviously, it's your journey. You got to go. We've all had insecurities and issues that we've had to deal with in ourselves.
Yeah.
It's okay to be introspective, but you can't lean into being introspective with the aim to go, it is my fault and let me find the reasons why.
Yeah.
But sometimes it isn't.
And this is where like the therapy helps a lot and writing helps a lot as well. Like figuring out like, oh, like the conversations you have with yourself. And if you look back and like look stylistically of all the guys I've dated, they all look quite different, or they all are maybe different careers or whatever. But then like core, they're pretty similar in a way that's like...
Unavailable?
Yes.
Ah, I knew that was going to be the one.
Yes.
That is a common thing for a lot of women.
Yeah.
So apparently women who like men who are unavailable like that because they don't want to take the jump of actually getting what they want in case they realize for themselves, I got it, it didn't work, it has to be me.
Yeah.
So when someone's unavailable, it's like, well, you're not available and I don't have to take that big dive into confirming that when you were available and I was here, that if it doesn't work out, it's my fault.
And you already know. Like you go into something knowing the answer. That's my thing. It's like, I know it's not going to work out.
Yeah.
But what if?
Yeah.
And that what if is always like, oh, maybe I can, maybe I can, maybe that can, I can change in some type of way, or maybe I might be special enough. And then it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy of being like,
babe, you can't do that. It's bad. Yourself.
It's toxic. It's not good.
You, oh my God. I don't know. I'm not a licensed therapist, so I can't.
I feel like you are.
You've got
therapist vibes.
When I have a therapist, and one of my modules for one of the courses I did at uni was behavioral psychology. So I have an understanding of things that I didn't pursue into a professional career. But you remember some of the things you studied and how to, even if you don't remember the depths of everything you studied, you understand to be able to read a situation, you have to disassociate yourself from it, take what you see, try and understand their perspective, and then also look at the perspective on the outside. There's a phrase that says, you can't tell the shape of a pyramid if you're so close to the bricks. You have to take a far enough step back to, you may not be able to see what like the intricacies of the bricks, but you can say, as much as you could tell me all the details and the cracks, this is a pyramid. This is what we're seeing. So as much as you might want to tell me, yeah, but can you not see the cracks? I need to be here because it's shaped like, yeah, that's great. I'm telling you that the sum of all parts is a pyramid right now. Mm. It's being able to take that step back.
Yeah.
I'm able to do that quite well, but I'm not licensed or will never try and get licensed to be able to diagnose things that allow you to then go, well, this is what I need to go and do.
Well, I think that's the hardest part about therapy, because I feel like my therapist always says, like, if it's pretty new, I've only just started going.
Okay.
Last few months, maybe.
Nice. Well done. Honestly, that's great.
Thank you.
It's needed. Loads of comedians need to go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know who you are. I know who you are as well. You need therapy. I wouldn't have said KE, but hearing what I'm saying, KE does need some therapy, and so do you. Don't be judgmental with KE. She's opening up in ways you're not opening up. That's what therapy does. You're trying to be closed and be funny on stage and hide all of your trauma and schemas behind your comedy material. You need therapy, rude boy and rude girl. Go and get therapy, sort your life out like KE's trying to. As far as I'm concerned, if you don't get therapy, you're dead at comedy. How about that? I hope that makes you insecure. Go and get therapy. You need it. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, just comment if you think you know who he's talking about. You know who you are.
They know who they are. You need therapy. Sorry, carry on.
So the therapist talks a lot about how she's like, oh, you're really good at articulating your feeling. Mm. But then I'm like, okay, I'm good. I can do that. But then I'm not good at like digging. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
I'm good at like, I can be like, I feel like this and this made me feel like that. And da 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 da. And maybe I feel like whatever. But I'm not good at going to the core of it. Is where that's where the journey that it's, you know, I'm trying to get to.
It's a long time. You have to be comfortable to be able to crack open that shell and then go in. And then when you go in, you still got a journey to figure out, well, what's it like down here?
Yeah,
it takes a minute. It really does. I've been with my therapist nearly 2 years, I reckon.
On Zoom or in person?
Person.
Yeah.
So she won't see anyone via Zoom, like. If she starts the sessions that way.
Okay.
Like, there are times I'm traveling, so she understands. So we'll do like a phone call or a Zoom. But the core of our sessions have to be face-to-face.
Oh, great.
Reason being, it's easier to hide some of your personality when you've only got this part of your body showing. She can't see when I'm like lying or when I'm hiding things. So I love that about her. Secondly, being on Zoom allows the disassociation at points where some people, I don't know, I haven't done it myself, probably have, oh, my connection's bad, or I'll call you back, or they'll be able to turn away and come off the camera or something.
Yeah.
You want to be completely exposed to the person that's trying to help you.
Yes.
Dig deep and get down to the core.
I agree.
Have you noticed this now, doing therapy? I said this in my comedy special. Therapy shows you who in your life could do with some therapy.
That's so true.
It really does. It's one thing. I'm sitting there looking at people around me, like family, friends, like, yo, hey, yo, hey, John.
Mm-hmm.
You could do it talking to someone.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I see it.
Have you ever suggested that to people?
Oh, loads of people.
Oh, they get upset.
They can. The defensive ones get upset. It's how you portray it.
Mm-hmm.
The best way I've ever described getting therapy is, again, it's in the special. If you have a car and you buy a car new, you get it maintained at regular intervals so you can keep the car as healthy as possible.
Right.
It's not that it's bad. It's that you go and get it checked up because you want it to remain as good as it was when it started. If you go to the gym regularly now, so when you're older, your body gets the benefits of the health that you've invested in now.
Right.
We do these things with our physical body. We do it with our material things. You got to do it with your mind. If you go to see a therapist or speak to somebody who can help you maintain that healthy place you're in, rather than just fix you from a broken place, see it from the positive. You're going to benefit from that a lot longer when you're able to handle your emotions that might come because you started from a good place maintaining that. If you're in a bad place with a car, you get that fixed. Mm-hmm. You do what you can to do that, and then you regularly keep the maintenance up so it can stay as healthy as possible. You've only got one body and one mind. Go and see a therapist if you need to, and go and see one if you don't, because you might be able to learn more about when things do get bad. That's exactly what a therapist is.
Yeah.
Someone who's close enough to you that to be there to talk to you, far enough that they can't use it against you, professional enough to know that they can't cross that barrier and share your business to anyone else, and their job is to try and help you.
Mm-hmm.
If you learn to talk to them, even if you don't feel like you got the assistance you want, I guarantee having sessions with a therapist will teach you the ability to be able to articulate yourself mm-hmm. more, because you have to. That's practice on how to communicate. Yes. That is not the goal, but you gain that as a bonus. Therapy helped me with comedy on stage.
Yeah.
Big time. Oh, yeah.
How so?
I can talk to people much more vulnerably and not really care about the ramifications of what they might say or see when I say what I say to them.
Right.
Because I understand the things I'm talking about, even if you don't. And then being able to deliver what I'm saying to you, I feel more comfortable delivering what I think and feel to an audience because I've had practice in being able to do that with my therapist, rather than just saying something, worrying about how you hear it and then not knowing how to articulate it any better.
Right.
When comedians are on stage, the ones we relate to the most are the ones who we feel are being genuine.
Mm-hmm.
I've never worked in an office. So me talking about an office job, it's going to sound silly, but I've worked with kids. So me talking about being a children's entertainer, I can articulate that to you, but you might not know what that's like.
Right.
Now, if you don't know what that's like, the practice I've had of being able to describe what it's like by talking to my therapist about experiences allow me to describe things better for the person that doesn't understand my perspective.
Oh, wow.
So it's helped my comedy in that way. Even with this, trying to explain that to you now, I can hear how I'm articulating myself to make it sound a lot more understood from your side.
Yes.
Rather than just assuming that when I say something, you must get it.
Wow.
Do you know, I made a promise to myself that I wouldn't try and make you laugh today.
Really?
Yeah, I wanted to come and talk to you. One, because you're my sister. And two, because this is such a homey environment that I could just chill in.
Mm.
We do so much as comedians to try and make each other laugh and so on. But you get the real gems when you hear someone talking.
That's this is the whole point of the podcast, because I'm quite big on vulnerability. I think it's just like, I'd much rather, because this is kind of like, that's kind of my approach to comedy, is that just, you know, I'd rather start really vulnerable and then... Yeah. The jokes will come sometimes.
Also, I'm sure they've heard it, but your laugh will just break every form of vulnerability and like seriousness that we've had.
Yes, it will.
Like, all of a sudden you're like, yeah, and you know, and that's why it's hard for me to get a boyfriend. Da-da-da-da-da, punchline. See, we're doing it now.
Oh my God, there we go.
See, it breaks it, doesn't it?
That's does. The problem. It breaks it up, and it's like it changes the vibe.
I still have the recording of you on my podcast in Edinburgh.
Oh my God.
Where I feel I All right. I filmed you doing the laugh and I played it on the thing. And I went to you and you're laughing and it's the same with the video that was... of you laughing. Then I got like a piece of tissue. I don't know if you remember this.
Yes.
Got like a tissue for a table.
Yes.
Where's it? Okay, so I got a tissue for a table and I pressed play. And then what you heard was when I did the tissue. Like that. I'm going to find it and send to you. It was so disrespectful.
That was good.
I'm sorry for
that. That was good. No, I liked it. I liked it. I like it. I, you know, yeah. Only comics like my laugh. Because.
Wait. Guys,
no, like no. Other guys are like, what?
They don't think that's cute.
No.
That's definitely.
They have to really like, they have to really want, like, you know, because some guys, because like with comics, it's like a laugh is like the highest
form of praise and appreciation. Yeah, of course.
And with other people, they're like,
I get that. For them, it's they want, their attraction to you is not, can I make you laugh? Whereas comics to comics is, if you laugh, I feel validated.
Yes.
Even if I don't want to make you laugh. It's validating.
It is.
Whereas a boyfriend or a guy you're dating or whatsoever, it's love me, but also look at my cute girlfriend.
Mm.
And when your laugh is as it is, with all respect, to some of them, they may think like it's not cute.
Yeah.
Like a tee-hee-hee-hee is cute and so on.
Mine's not that.
But the table wipe, it's not the cutest laugh.
The female Jimmy Carr is not.
Do you know when people say the female Jimmy Carr, his is worse.
It's
that at the end. That's the bit there. That laugh at the end. Yours just goes, and then you go in the distance. You kind of quieten off a little bit as well. So it kind of goes as a little sample, and it's there. His is very there.
Yeah.
So when people say that, I mean, I get what they're saying.
Right.
Just know yours is not as aggressive as prominent as his is.
That makes me feel better.
And it's cute in its own way.
Thank you. It is cute in its own way.
Plus, people can't, especially in the UK, they can shut up. You got an amazing accent that I know so many people are like, oh my God, that's so exotic. That's what happens, isn't it?
Wait, with my speech impediment, you mean?
Not your speech impediment, your American accent.
Well, yeah. So my American accent, but I also have a speech impediment.
So do I. What's yours?
Mine is the CH and the ch, like ch and j.
So you can't say words with CH properly?
No, it takes me, I have to really think. Because I live over here, people kind of just think it's my accent.
Part of the accent.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it.
Yeah.
Do you know what mine is? I have a lisp.
Oh, but that's like not noticeable.
I used to do radio, I do acting. You have to learn how to control it. But if I get tired, I got like a lisp.
Oh.
So, like, even though I can hear it when I go, so, there's like a s at the beginning of it and then so.
Oh.
It's not like Elephant Man from Jamaica, the reggae, isn't it, the artist. It's not like his is like, sizzle, yes, ladies, we're over here. It's like, his is proper, like, prominent. Mine isn't that bad.
Some people notice mine and some people don't.
I've never noticed it. I'll probably hear it now because you've told me.
Yeah, you hear it now.
I've never noticed it.
The Don Ward at the Comedy Store was like, as his feedback for me after my set was, you have a lisp.
That was his feedback.
And I was like, it's a speech impediment. And he's like, yeah, people can't understand you.
Big Don.
Yeah.
That's what he said to you.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that?
I was like, what do you propose I do with that information?
That's it.
And he was like, I'm trying to help you.
So I'll tell you, all right, watch this. I'm going to preface this firstly with, I love what the store means to comedy in the UK.
Yes.
But there are times that everyone has said they're very much of the time that they started. And when it comes to being a lot more newer now, they're kind of playing catch up to a lot of the newer clubs that have come in and have stormed by being a lot more modern in their way approach to comedy. They're very much part of the staple foundations of comedy in the UK. So we can respect that. So what happened was I did a show in Manchester. I was at the Comedy Store in Manchester. He came up to see that one. Really good lineup. It was a Comedy Mania show. I was a host. I had Rem Conway, Kane Brown, Judy Love, I believe Marlon Davis as well, I think was on the show, and me hosting. Really, really good show. He saw that show and was like, this is great. And also, because I think he wanted to increase the diversity of the audience that come down to the Comedy Store in London, he said, well, could you bring this show down? Because it was a very diverse audience, as you can imagine, with the lineup as well. So he brought it down. We did it on a Monday. But because I can imagine that's his baby, he's going to be cautious about who are you going to book for the show. Because as much as I'm going to give you the show, I want you to be able to book a lineup that when you're lined upstairs, it still represents a comedy store, but also the diversity and so on. I put on a show. There was one night where he looked at Labby and was like, are you sure this is going to be all right? I was like, yeah, it's a good... Trust me, everyone in here is a killer. You may not know that, but they're great at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic comedians. He's like, oh, I don't know how well this guy's going to do and so on. So why not get like this and that? And I said, please just trust me with this lineup. And he went, I trust you. But initially he was like, I'm not really sure how this is going to work. Because again, it's where he was at with his view of comedy. They're a lot more modern now, but this was like 2017.
Right.
And the lineup was, on that lineup, one of the acts that he was like, I don't know, because how is he doing and is he going to be good on the lineup? I said, no, trust me, he's going to kill that show. It was Mo. One of the biggest names in comedy in this country. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Wow.
He was on the lineup for the show. And Dom was like, I don't know how he's going to do. I was like, just trust me. A little bit afterwards, there was pictures taken from that show. For a little bit afterwards, on their landing page after Mo had blown up, they'd use one of the pictures from that show as one of the pictures for the store. I always looked at that. I remembered, I said, you know what? I'm not going to put you down because you didn't know.
Yeah.
We all could see greatness in each other because we know who's good at doing shows. You didn't know. You were stuck in the mindset of, I don't know how this is going to work out well. But like, you,
wow.
Do you see what I'm saying? You used the picture of one of the acts that I know you were like, I don't know how well he's going to do. That, I never took it negatively. I just took it as when you might have a perspective of what you think is helpful for acts, or when you, what you think is a great show to put together, or what the acts are going to do at your venue, just know you may not know it all and the feedback may not be the best. So when you hear feedback like that,
yeah,
as much as we respect what that club represents.
Yeah, I respect it heavily.
Definitely.
But at the same time, you have to take stuff like that
with a pinch of salt and just go, you know what, it is what it is. Just take that and go, all right, I got a speech impediment, but what does that do for the club? And did I do well? And even if I didn't...
I didn't have a great time that show, to be fair.
Nah?
No. I was too nervous.
Maybe he was saving you saying you were terrible by going, you had
no,
a
No, he knew. He knew. He knew. Like,
oh, snap.
Yeah, okay. We all knew.
It so happens. It happens it to the best fair, of us.
But also, like, yeah, there's a lot of pressure in that room, too, because it's just so old school. So yeah. It's like, there is pressure that's on... Not
you got to bully the crowd there sometimes.
Yeah.
I love that.
Okay, I'm going to ask you one little question. What, if anything, is too serious to be joked about?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing. I believe, I stand by this. You can make a joke about absolutely anything, but you cannot control how people feel about that. If you make a joke about it, you have the right to. You cannot be upset if someone else doesn't like it,
right.
One. And two, you have to be intelligent enough to be able to deliver that joke that people can hear you on it. And three, you have to remember, you have to be funny.
Yeah.
That's the core of being a comedian. Anything can be made a joke out of. I won't touch on topics because I'm not in the space that I can talk about that.
Right.
Because that's my personal thing. But I will never say that nothing is too serious to make a joke out of. Anything can be, as long as you are smart enough to make that joke.
Mm.
You are knowledgeable enough to be able to give all context and nuance to that joke, and it's funny. And you have no right to tell people, but it's just a joke. You should just like it. No one has to like what you've said.
Yeah.
The same way that
I
no
love
one could
that
talk.
Answer. I really love that answer. Wow. Well, yeah. Thank you so much, Ori.
You're welcome.
Is there anything you want to plug?
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to what I'm saying right now. Did I go into
yeah, wow.
Next year I'm touring from February until May. The Orator Tour, right? You can get tickets on oristyler.co.uk. Currently the tour is UK based. We will extend to additional dates, but the first leg of the tour is from February until May. 30 shows, come out, check them out. You might see Katie at a couple of them as well. Just want to say that.
What?
You
oh
might
my
see
God.
Katie at a couple of them.
Thanks, Steve.
So make sure you come out to that. Also, Respectfully Podcast, I record every week. It comes out every Wednesday. Check that out. The podcast is basically just conversation, banter. We talk about what's been going on around. But there is a caveat. Anytime that someone says something that says respectfully, you're allowed to be disrespectful afterwards.
That's great.
Sometimes it gets disrespectful. Sometimes we go a whole episode without it. But listen out for it. That's respectfully. Right. And follow me on social media at Ori, A-U-R-I-E, Styler, S-T-Y-L-A, all one word. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kate.
All right. Well, have a great day.
Boom.
See you later.